Hi guys, I'm Dan Reed and welcome back to the Career Dad Show.
Greg Reed is a 32-time best-selling author, filmmaker, founder of The Secret Knock. He runs 6 businesses and he even has a star on the Las Vegas Walk of Stars. But he's also a proud dad. We talk about Greg's upbringing and entrepreneurial spirit, the importance of seeking counsel, not opinion, and why the fear of judgment is holding us back. Welcome back to the Career Dad Show, and I'm joined by Greg S. Reed. Greg, how are you?
So good. Even I want to be me. Things are going really good right now.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And, you know, so as per the intro, you know, you're an award-winning author, keynote speaker, you're a film producer, an entrepreneur, an honorary PhD. But before all of that, you were Greg Reed. And I'm just, if I may, I just want to find how someone so successful, where that came from. So what was it like growing up? Who was the little boy that was Greg S. Reed who became who you are today?
Yeah, a kid got in a lot of trouble. I mean, it's anything else, right? I mean, it's interesting. I was going through my old report cards from when I was a kid, and especially my favorite one was that I would never make it in reading and writing, and my creative writing was the worst thing of all my grades. And yet now I'm a international bestselling author and speaker who travels the world to tell stories on stage.
Yeah.
The moral of the story is don't let other people set your limitations for you, right?
Absolutely. And I definitely want to come on to that in a little bit. And actually your PhD is in literature, is that right?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? More importantly, I got a star on the Walk of Fame in Las Vegas across from the Bellagio for being an author. And again, I tell everybody, honest goodness, I'm probably the least qualified guy to do what I do, but I understood the power of working your strengths and you hire your weaknesses. Mm. So for example, I can't really read very well. I can't write. I'm dyslexic. I can't spell. Play me words with friends. You win every time. But I've got amazing ghostwriters and copy editors that take my gift of gab because I'm a good communicator. Mm. And then craft them in a way that people would want to read it in book form. And that's why it's become the juggernaut it is.
Yeah. And that's a really good segue because I wanted to start with the books. And so if my research is correct, you've either written or collaborated on over 100 books. Is that right?
Correct. Okay. It's incredible. Yeah. I was just looking at the list the other day. I'm at 108 that I know of, but I'm sure there's another 30 that I don't. And what that means is, look, either I'm the author, I'm the co-author, someone wrote an article about me, I did a blurb, I wrote a foreword and afterward, you know, somehow, you know, my name was attached to that book.
Yeah.
And it's really, really cool out there because there's so many up and coming rising authors that are spreading amazing messages.
There's two books that I really want to focus on to begin with. And the first is 3 Feet Away from Gold, because even the title just resonates, you know. Job searching's like a pack of cards. If you keep flipping them over, you will hit an ace. You just have to keep going. And so how much does 3 Feet Away from Gold resonate with you? How close do you think people get to what they want to do and then just stop?
Very. It's so interesting. Even in American football, you know, it's that last yard is the difference between winning a Super Bowl or not, right? Yeah. The last 3 feet is the hardest to go. It's that, you know, so close. But how many people quit one class short from a college degree or sales or marketing or marriage? It's easy to quit, but it's the people that persevere and go that extra. They're the ones that we tell the stories and we write all the books about today.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is, you know, if we can't do it ourselves, find a support system, a great mentor that maybe can see some greatness in you and you can't see it in yourself at times.
Yeah. And what do you think is the main reason why people stop?
Fear. And it's interesting. It's usually not the fear of success or the fear of, you know, of failure and that stuff. It's usually the fear of criticism, fear of judgment. So for example, even if you work your entire career, you know, you go to college for all these years to be an accountant and you stop one class short, you do it because you don't want to be an accountant because your parents told you to do it. So then you're accountable for it. So it's that judgment.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. You know, there's a coffee mug that says, what would you do if you couldn't fail? Yeah. And the big question today is, what would you do when you stop worrying about what other people think?
Yeah.
And then you ask yourself, what would that look like? And more importantly, understand no one's thinking about you. They're dealing with their own situations. No one's looking in the window right now. Yeah. If there were ever a God-given time to start your business or to write a book or make a, this is it.
Yeah.
And so this is your opportunity. You almost get a get out of jail free card to take a free swing at something.
Yeah. And again, just my own personal journey, that really resonates with me. I think I always call it a journey as opposed to a destination, that I've gone from external validation on the journey towards internal validation, which has really helped in the decisions that I've been able to make and just the judgment that I've been able to put to one side. But what is, for someone who's not quite there, what is, you know, is there a piece of practical advice to actually try and shut out that noise and to just do?
Yeah, surround yourself with people that are getting the results you want. This is super easy, actually. This is the easy. Can do. Look, stop telling your family and your friends your dreams. Stop it.
Yeah.
Stop. Surround yourself with people that are getting the results you want. Look, I've got amazing people that I play poker, I go golfing with, I hang, but I'm not going to talk to them about my business ventures and entities if they're not doing it as well. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
They'll talk you out of it to protect you, to keep you safe.
Yeah.
The secret of success is to seek counsel and not opinion. Mm. Opinion is based on ignorance, lack of knowledge, and inexperience. Like all your family friends who've never done it. Counsel is based on wisdom, knowledge, and mentorship.
Yeah.
If you go to a family friend and say you're going to write a best-selling book, they'll talk you out of it to protect you because they know you got a D in English and they've never written a best-selling book. If you go to Jack Canfield, who wrote Chicken Soup for the Soul and sold 1 billion copies, he's going to say, sit down, here's what you need to know, and give you counsel based on wisdom, knowledge, and mentorship. If we would spend our activity only seeking counsel and ignoring opinion, that's the day your life would change.
Yeah. I love that because, counsel and opinion are so different. And I think that the thing that I realized is that there are people who we love and we trust for good reasons, but we will go to them as if they have the authority to talk about things that they do not have the authority or knowledge about. And then we take that on board and it stops us doing the thing that could actually just make, not even rich, just make us happy.
Correct. Yeah. And by the way, being rich really makes you happy sometimes. You know, it doesn't have to be separated. And this is one of the things that keeps coming up over and over.
Yeah.
You know, my son, and I know we talk about the career dad and the concept of fatherhood.
Yeah.
And for my son, you know, I like to teach him that he can have everything. Yeah. And more importantly, how you attain it. It was interesting. I was doing a podcast. And I know it's a weird segue, but it was really interesting.
Okay.
And a woman asked me a question. She goes, Craig, she goes, do you pay your kid an allowance to do the stuff he doesn't like take out the trash and, you know, mow the lawn? I go, absolutely. I'm going to teach him the power of making money and the importance. And she goes, oh, my man. I go, what? And she goes, that's just a shame. What are you talking about? She goes, oh, you're ruining your child. And I go, what are you talking about? That's the way. She goes, Craig, think about it. She goes, you're training your child from the very first memory that it knows. The only way to make money is to do something they hate.
Mm.
And I went, whoa.
Yeah.
So I went back to my kid and says, tell you what. I go, Colt, you really do great with these memes. And on Instagram, I got 500,000 followers. I go, why don't you start making me my little video memes? I'll use those and pay you your money for what you work your strengths at.
Yeah.
And then you just make the bed and do the trash as a contribution for living in this estate.
Yes.
And, you know, having the lifestyle you do. And that paradigm changed everything.
Really?
So now he wants to make money. He says, hey dad, can I whip you up something that he knows that he's an expert at? And by doing that, everyone comes out on top.
And what age was he when that kind of paradigm shift happened?
7. And it's interesting because it's really quite phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, your father and my father and everyone's fathers before that in our generation only spent 7 minutes a day on average FaceTime with their kids. That's it. And in today's generation, we're always there because it's a different time of entrepreneurship and things of this nature.
Yeah.
So where we grew up and go, dad, you were never there. Our kids are going to grow up and say, man, you would never go away, right?
Yeah.
It's two different paradigms.
Yeah. And how did you say your son was Cole?
Colt.
C-O-L-T.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, when he was 7, he had the number one album on Amazon for spoken word. And then he did it again at age 8. And now he's getting ready to do it again. So it's pretty cool.
Amazing. And how old is he now?
8.
Eight. So he's 8 now. That's fantastic. Yeah. Yeah.
It's really, really neat. So I take my, people that are amazing engineers in the studio and they'll record him doing his mantra that he says before he goes to bed. He says, "My name's Colt. I'm happy. I'm powerful. I'm brave. I'm wise. I'm worthy. I'm successful. I help people." And then he puts it to hip hop music and it took off and people went crazy on it. He has his own Spotify channel, Colt Reed. Isn't that crazy?
That's awesome. I am. We'll make sure to be linking to that when this podcast goes out. And it's funny because my son, he's just turned 6 and he's really into the drums. And but what he hates is practicing. But he likes the success of getting better. So we drew up this kind of timetable. And, you know, if you practice 10 minutes, 3 times a week for 4 weeks, I'll buy you a new drum amp. And it's kind of listening to you almost reaffirms, because part of me was like, am I just bribing him to do something that should be fun? And then you think, well, actually, you know, no child is intrinsically aware of how to better themselves. So actually, if we just help them along that way with something they enjoy, surely that's better than to get them to do something that they don't enjoy, which is really good.
I agree. And it's so funny. I do things which is a little counterintuitive. So, for example, if my son had that same situation,
yeah,
I would say, I'm sorry, but you're not allowed to practice.
Yeah.
Until you do this. And I would make that a paradigm where he thrived and wanted to go do that in exchange. And it's really interesting because, again, you know, kids are smart, but also the realities are when they know that they're being fed something that they truly enjoy and then you give them more of that, it's amazing to see them excel.
Yeah.
I interviewed one of the most famous fathers who worked with a child who's a very famous guy. And I asked him a question. I said, "Why did your son have so much success?" And he said, "Well, every time he wanted to dance, we let him dance more." And he goes, "When we gave him a football and he didn't want it, we just set it down."
Yeah.
And by feeding what he wanted to do, he excelled, but then we used it as a weapon. So at any time that he didn't do something, we took away the dance and took a thing. So the things that he was excelling at and growing at became such a, you know, thriving moment that he ended up becoming a phenomenon that the world knows today.
Yeah. And I think that's so linked to the judgment as well. Cause I think as parents, you can feel so much pressure to, you know, put your kid into the system to, you know, and, you know, for my son, he really likes his drums. He really likes his video games. He's now starting to code a little bit, but he's not an outdoorsy kid. And, you know, should I be pushing him outdoors a bit? Maybe, but actually there's time for that. And yeah, I think that if we actually focus on feeding them what they enjoy, then again, if that turns into success, fantastic. But again, if it's just happiness, that's a great foundation for success.
Well, think about it. You're only going off a paradigm that you were taught as a kid because your dad's like, "Get outside and go shoot some birds with a BB gun." That's what you're told.
Yeah.
And it's not today's generation. Look, someone said the greatest line to me the other day. I go, "God, my son just wants to play on video games and do all this stuff." And they said something that goes, "It's just there." Are you ready for this one? Equipment. He goes, "Your equipment was a baseball bat and a glove." Yeah. His equipment is the keyboard and the mouse. It's just different equipment.
Yeah,
and I went, boom. And then that kind of changed for me. But I will tell this, and I know we don't want to do the whole segment on dads, but I had the greatest aha just recently. And I don't know how much language we will use, so I'll be kind.
Okay.
He was out in the garage and he was putting away all of his Nerf guns. He had like this board with hundreds of Nerf weapons out there. And they had a fight earlier before and they're all laid out and he started putting them away. And I said, "Hey, dinner's ready in 15 minutes. He goes, "Okay, Dad, I'll be there." 15 minutes comes by. I go, "Hey, you know, dinner's almost ready." "Yeah, I'll be right in there." I come out and I go, "Dinner's ready. Get your ass in here." And he walks inside, just like my dad would do. And he goes, "Dad, you're a beep and beep." And he froze like a deer in headlights because he's never said that these words before. And I go, "Colt, you said that in the exact right context." I go, why am I a blank and blank? And he goes, "Dad," he goes, "all I wanted to do, because you know I got a little bit of OCD, I wanted to put away all my toys so they were done. So after dinner, I could go to bed and not think about it."
Yeah.
I go, "Son, I am a blank and blank for that." And I go, "Not only do I apologize, but listen, you don't talk to your dad that way about respect."
Sure.
And I go, "From now on, why don't we come up with a code?" And we called it, we made something up with like watermelon. Yeah. And I said, "From now on, if you're right at the end of a game or a thing, just say watermelon and I'll know that you're going to tap out and you'll be done."
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. And guess what? We've never had a fight since because now we understand each other's boundaries and lanes and we have a code to speak in.
taking what I learned growing up, and, you know, my son would be playing games, I'd say, right, we've got to do this now. And he would freak out. We'd have a 20-minute meltdown. Whereas actually, if I said, how long do you need? And he'd go, 2 minutes. And in that 2 minutes, everything would be fine. And yeah, it's just a whole paradigm shift. Absolutely. Another one of the books that I wanted to talk about are Thoughts Are Things, because I'm a huge believer in, yeah, just what you think can become reality. But I don't know any of the, you know, I've not talked to people who've done this. I don't know any science or anything behind it. But I just, for someone who's written a book on this, I just wondered if you could share your experience as to why that is so important.
Well, yeah, we said Bob Proctor, the gentleman in The Secret and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I wrote a book called Think and Grow Rich, Thoughts Are Things.
Yeah.
And actually we found out that thoughts are not things. That was the takeaway of the book. We found that thoughts backed by massive action become things.
Right.
So we sat down with top neuroscientists and physicists, and they said, look, it's been proven that we have 64,000 thoughts per day. Majority of those thoughts are called ANTs, automatic negative thoughts. They're the reptilian part of your brain to protect you. So when you walk out of a cave, that a dinosaur doesn't eat you.
Yeah.
He said, so if 64 thoughts a day, majority of them are negative. If that was true, that thoughts are things, then everything would be chaos and drama.
Yeah.
If only the thoughts that you took action on become our reality. Because if thoughts were things, you might have hit that bicyclist that was on the side of the road that cut you off a little bit too much. He goes, but you didn't do that.
Yeah.
He goes, if your thoughts were things, he goes, you know, everyone would be in jail. He goes, that's not our truth. And so he goes, how many times have you, you know, been in a shower with a $1 million idea, by the time you brush your teeth, it's down the drain like your toothpaste.
Yeah.
And so thoughts are not things. It's only the thoughts backed by massive action become our truth and reality.
Okay. And so again, so if we go back to people always, everyone's got a thought of how to make a business, how to write a book, how to do, and then the lack of action, can that go back to the fear of the judgment and criticism?
It is. That's so- it. Look, That's all it is. It's people are worried about what other people are thinking. And here's the biggest thing. You're going to fail. I pretty much can guarantee. Look, 85, 90% of new businesses fail the first year. This is what other people don't understand. You need 26 times at bat before you're going to get a home run. By just odds and statistics of every great entrepreneur that's ever lived, that's the way it works.
Yeah.
So if you got up the bat and the ball thrown at you 26 times, you're guaranteed you're going to hit a home run.
Yeah.
But you need 26 times. Unfortunately, most people start a business, fail, try something else, dabble and it doesn't work. Try a network marketing company, doesn't thing. And they say, hey, I tried that. I'm going to go get a real job.
Yeah.
But that was only 3 shots.
Yeah.
So sometimes, like you said, with that deck of cards, the ace will come up first card. Sometimes it's at the end of the deck. You don't know where it's coming, but you have to give yourself 26 shots before it'll become true.
Yeah. And so... I mean, I'm just trying to think. I don't even think I've got 26 ideas in me, let alone worrying about whether, you know, there's the judgment and criticism. But looking at your repertoire, because we've just talked about the books, and then there's, you know, there's the speaking, and there's the entrepreneurship. And so how you've got so many things going on, is that how your mind works? If you had to focus on one, would that not be good for you? Or is it more that it's just like a diversified income on steroids?
We were just told as a kid, we were brainwashed the wrong way. They said, you got to focus on one thing and do it well. It's just not true. And especially in today's society, you work your strengths, hire your weaknesses, and you multitask as much as you can. So I run 6 different corporations at any given time.
Yeah.
And I have one person, she's my secret weapon called Shannon. She comes over and I say, out of my brain dump, I'll go 6 minutes and go bam, 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 bam. And then she goes and gives that directive. Bam, 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 bam. She gives that directive the other way.
Yeah.
And by doing that, I get it out of my system and I can focus on what I do best. I work my strengths.
Yeah.
So the whole idea is I multitask to get it out. And again, same thing as the books. Look, if the 26 is true, that means I got to get at my name in as many books as I can till eventually get a hit. And that's the way it's worked. And statistically, it's very interesting to even say that. I'm going to go back and look at that because I think I've had 4 pretty good books, like decent bestsellers, and 100. So that's about 25. 125. Yeah. Now I'm thinking about it. It's pretty interesting.
That's awesome. And I'm a huge fan of stats and data and looking at that. And, you know, when you're, because you've said this a number of times, you know, you hire for your weaknesses. How did you go about identifying your weaknesses?
Oh, come on. I don't even know how to answer that. You know what you suck at. Don't do that. That's it. Pretty easy. People say, you know, get better and strive. That's a bunch of malarkey. That was back in the 1800s. The way it is today, there's Upwork.com. There's Fiverr. There's Craigslist. There's all these amazing tools of access to people around the world that we need to take advantage of.
Yeah.
So, for example, I'm doing this amazing quote book right now. It's kind of like a journal slash quote goals book. And I found someone in, I think, Pakistan, and she's just rocking it for, you know, I could never find someone here in the States to do what I'm doing with her at that level for that price.
Yeah.
And it's really cool because it's been an even playing field. You know, if you go to one of these hiring apps and you find someone in the Philippines or Malaysia with a PhD in literature, you know, you pay them $5,000 to write your best-selling book, which costs $100,000 in America. There's so many opportunities. People aren't doing it. And then you can even leverage. It couldn't even cost you that because you can even go to them and say, hey, what if I only give you $1,000, but we share in the profits 50-50? What if this? I mean, especially in today's society, COVID, everyone's trapped in. What if you had an idea for a cool logo design? Another guy's sitting at home in his garage and he used to print t-shirts, but he can't because it's closed. Another person's a web designer. He doesn't got any business. You pull your business together, you become a three-way partner, and now you're in business. When things open up, you got the coolest t-shirt line. How can we start thinking like that?
Yeah, and that's a really good segue onto one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, which is win-win partnerships. And you know, again, you touched on it there that, you know, when I first started in business, it was here are your weaknesses, get better at them. And you know, we kind of, let's put that to one side. I was also taught, you know, throw people under the bus before they throw you under the bus, right? Which never really sat well with me. But reading some of the stuff that you've been doing or that you talk about genuine competitors getting together and finding mutual beneficity, if that's the right word, in collaborating as opposed to being competitors.
Yeah, our 16th president, Abraham Lincoln, had a great quote. He says, you destroy your enemies by making them your friends.
Right.
And it always stuck with me. And it's going like, how can you do that? So for example, right now we're going through these challenges where I did live events, you know, supposed to do it this week, but we can't because of all the situation. And all my competitors were the same way. So I called them up and said, hey, I'm gonna start doing these amazing streamlined things. I hired the best people I could get a hold of to help me make my Zooms look like a TV show.
Yeah.
And what I've done is said, hey, by the way, I just did one. Would you like access to my people I just hired to make your things good? I don't get anything for it. Then it's just the right thing to do to help your neighbor.
Yeah.
And by doing that, we started collaborating. And now all of a sudden, my competitors' clients are becoming mine and mine are becoming them. And we're becoming a family more than we were competitors.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting to say, why aren't more businesses doing that?
And why do you think they're not?
Well, fear of loss. Again, that's the biggest thing. You know, the fear of loss is more powerful than the benefit of gain. If I sat there and said, hey, whoever gets the next sale gets $100. That's a fear of benefit. But if I sit there and say, if you don't get a sale in 15 minutes, you're fired. It's a whole different energy.
Yeah.
And the fear of losing is more powerful than the fear of gain. That's why be a good God-fearing Christian isn't as powerful as burn in damnation for hell. I mean, that's what's more powerful, right?
Yeah.
You know, drive the speed limit, get there on time. Oh, get a ticket, lose your license. So everything's based on this power pull thing. Yeah. So just understand that's the way it is.
And do you think, just thinking how to phrase this, do you think that that's something that has been with you as a kid growing up? Or do you think that's something that you've learned over time?
No, I've always been that way. I got in trouble for it.
Really?
I mean, I used to get in trouble for this because as an entrepreneur, as a kid, again, when I wanted something, for example, I wanted to go, I would get all the neighbors and I'd say, hey, I'll mow your lawn for 10 bucks.
Yeah.
And they'd all hire me. And then I'd hire the neighborhood kids for $5 to mow the lawn for me, right? Everyone's winning, right? I'm getting what I want. They get, everyone wins and I get in trouble because I'm taking advantage of the kids, right? And so it's now I'm rewarded for it. But at the time, they thought it was the thing, but that's how my brains always work.
That's so funny. And you're right, because no one's losing. It's actually you're creating opportunities for other people that might not have had that opportunity.
That's the way it is. I know. And so for me, I'm always looking for the cliche win-win. But I'm just going, look, how can everyone benefit?
Yeah.
Even the people that work with me, Shannon's probably good for another 6 months or a year, and she'll be gone. Know why? Because everyone that works for me, my job is to train you out.
Right.
When you come in, I want to train you everything you need to know and give you all the information so you can protect me the best, but you can also leave to go do your own life.
Yeah.
And so I think most people want to hold on to people. And my idea is, how do you love them out?
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. So I think when I put on my corporate day job hat, I kind of like to think 50% of the team I want to get in and move on quickly, because they're going to do some fantastic work to be in that position to do that. And I want a subsection of the team to do that, but a little bit slower. And a subsection, I kind of want to be there to be that base knowledge forever, if that suits them. But that's really interesting. I also wanted to ask you just around, I guess, karma, one for a better word, because, you know, you talk about just putting, you know, it's the right thing to do, be good to your neighbor, just putting...
All right, wait. I want to go back to what you just said.
Okay.
But the only reason we even have that thought is that a fear of loss, back to fear.
Yeah.
It's because we're afraid that we can't replace that.
Yeah.
And it's, look, abundance is infinite, man. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
So right now in the airways, there's country music. Yes or no?
Yes.
Classical.
Yes.
Rap music.
Yeah.
And you take a receiver, you dial it into an exact frequency, you pull it down from the ethers. Agreed?
Yes.
Well, guess what? Success, happiness, wealth, relationships, fitness is all there too. And certain people know how to do something called tapping the source. Yeah. And you do it by the questions in which you ask. So the receiver, if it's a station like 100.7, 100.4, as close as it is, doesn't work. It has to be exact. Well, the way it works in the infinite universe is the questions of what we ask is very direct. Like Google, we can't say men's shoes and it'll give you a billion things. But if we say men's shoes, size 10, 800 feet within my vicinity, red with blue laces, it's going to give you that exact.
Yeah.
And the way that we pull out the ethers is the questions in which we ask. That's how we dial in the frequency. Unfortunately, most people say, God, why does this always happen to me?
Yeah.
And then the God Google goes, doop, this is why, you dumbass, and gives you more of that.
Yeah.
Or you sit there and go, gosh, things are going good. When will this go to hell in a handbag? Doop, Tuesday at 4. That's the question. But if we sit there and say, how can it get better than this? What's an opportunity and a challenge I'm not seeing? What can I do now to benefit a relationship that's around me? Then all of a sudden, those Google answers start coming.
Yeah.
So I'm very careful of the questions and what you ask, because you're just going to get it back in return.
Okay. That's really good food for thought. Can I come back to that karma question? Where do you, I don't know if I believe in karma, but I just believe if you do good things and then people will want to also do good things for you. It just kind of makes sense, but I just didn't know whether you believe in some cosmic force that helps that, or is it just human nature?
Look, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a therapist. All I know is, if I can keep my side of the fence clean, everything needs to go my way.
Yeah.
That's what I learned. So I do is I'm selfish. And the way I'm selfish is I make sure that I do what I say. I say what I do.
Yeah.
I live my commitments. I see my stuff through.
Yeah.
You might think, oh, you're so good. No, I'm keeping my side of the fence clean.
Yeah.
And as long as I do that, I tend to people don't throw their trash on my garage.
Yeah.
And so that's how I keep it going for myself. But other people might have different philosophies.
That's fair. And a minute ago, we kind of briefly mentioned COVID, and I just wanted to talk about capitalizing on situations. So I was watching a talk that you did, or I think it might have been a podcast, and you were talking about Starbucks and saying, you know, when COVID hit, Starbucks stock went down, and you see that as an opportunity because lo and behold, Starbucks will reopen and the stock will go back up. And I'm just thinking how, you know, people are talking about COVID as we're entering a new normal. And part of me is thinking, are we kind of hardwired to just go back to how we were when we're able to? So I just wondered your thoughts on that.
So 100% we're going to go right back to where we were.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. You guys not have news there? As soon as they open up any part of your town, do not people flood out there? And when they say you can go to the beach again, did not everyone flood there? And when they said, so that's our instinct. We have a short memory span. Yeah. Like this whole thing's going to last a year, whatever that period of time is, and the vaccines, and then the world comes back, and then people are going to forget about it and move on. That is the way it is. And what we need to do now is be kind to our future self.
Right.
What can we do today to be kind to our future self? And for me, I'm looking at that in every direction. For example, look, I'm realizing in America, 32% though, if people did not make their rent payment or the mortgage payments the last couple of months. Right. And same thing, cars and things. So I'm going, all right, well, this is all going to snowball. Eventually, that's going to end up, you know, hit somebody. So what I'm doing is thinking ahead of myself. I go, what I need to do is get my credit perfect, as high as I can, because I want to be in the position that I can come in and take something that's about to default, and I can maybe take that over. Right. Or what can I do? And then you go, well, that's capitalism. I go, yeah, but I'm going to take it a burden off someone's hands that is about to lose everything, and I might be able to come in and save it. Yeah. So it's all how you look at it. And so for me, I'm constantly being kind to my future self by seeing what's possible down the line.
Yeah. And as well with COVID, because you talked about events and physical events, and you're this great connector and networker of people, and I'd say an extrovert in the traditional sense of getting energy from others. How have you found lockdown, as in, not getting as much as that physical kind of interaction with others?
Yeah, it sucks. I don't like it. I mean, I miss it. I crave it.
Yeah.
And again, I think other people do too. That's why they're going to go back as soon as they're going to have that opportunity.
Yeah.
I live on the beach in San Diego, California.
Nice.
And if I took a snapshot and showed it to you this weekend, it was crazy. There was not even a spot of sand to sit on.
Wow.
So people are thriving and to get out. And what they did in my city is they took all the restaurants that were shut down, and they took the parking lot, all the parking spaces in front on the street, and they blocked them off, and they brought all the tables outside. And now all the restaurants are outside, and it's actually been absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And so people are now getting out, they're coming out and seeing people. And I think that might become the new normal, where they go, hey, this is kind of nice, a fresco in San Diego, yeah, California, rather than being inside. But I don't think it's a new normal, the future of how everything will be.
Yeah. And I think there's been some really great examples of companies that have pivoted to be able to adapt in these times. And I think that the restaurant sector, definitely in the UK, has been hit incredibly hard. But those companies that have adapted to be able to even do delivery that they might have not done before, or to offer cook at home packages and then YouTube classes to, bring that community together. I think that's really, really cool. Again, building on this connections and network, I think you and I would probably agree that having a network and curating and cultivating that is incredibly important. How would you recommend for someone who might not be as comfortable going up to someone and saying, hey, how are you doing? Who are you? What can they do so that they don't miss out on those opportunities that networks bring?
I think this goes back to that same thing about being a psychologist or a counselor. I can't tell people what to do, how to do it. I mean, it's up to them. I feel sorry for those people.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we can do in today's society is start reaching out through more social media.
Yeah.
I mean, people are more accessible today than ever before, between DMs on Instagram to Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn. Everyone's accessible. I mean, the people I'm getting to right now, insane. So in 2 days, I'm doing my Secret Knock live stream, and I reached out to people, that an astronaut that did 5 spacewalks, he's coming on.
Yeah.
I reached out to a guy who's building the lunar lander elevator to space. I'm bringing in this top neuroscientist, all these cool people, because I'm just reaching out.
Yeah.
And I'm going, people are accessible. But the way I do it is different than most people. I do it with something called specificity.
Okay.
Like, none of these people know who I am. You've never heard of me. No one listening to this has ever heard of me in my life. And that's how it is when I reach out to these people. So it has nothing to do with fame and attention. But here's how I do it. Specificity. I will reach out to somebody and say, I need 12.5 minutes of your time. I will cover all the costs that come to your establishment. By the time I open the door, by the time I leave, will be 12.5 minutes. I'll start a stopwatch. I'm going to ask you one simple question, blah, blah, blah. The chance of them doing that is so high. But unfortunately, most people say, I love your work. I want to pick your brain, take you to dinner, take you to lunch. I don't know you. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So specificity is the key. Another thing, if I'm on stage and there's 10,000 people and I come off, they all say, hey, how can I work with you and be of value? Again, I don't have time for a resume check. We're in the line. But if you say, hey, dude, I saw your Instagram. You have 500,000 followers. I make memes. Let me send you a cool one for free. Now, in 15 seconds, I know who you are, what you do, and you got my cell phone.
Yeah.
That's the way you need to do it. Specificity rules the world.
Yeah. And I think the bit that alongside the specificity is just that how available people are. I mean, the fact that I'm speaking to you now, I caught up with Eric Swanson, I spoke to Frank Shankwitz, like people who I just wouldn't have had access to in, quote, normal times. Before we go into the final question, I just wanted to ask, you know, you've built up all of this success, but you're also a dad and a really proud dad. And I'm just wondering, did they ever compete in terms of spending time with your kid and growing what you do? Or are you happy with the balance that you have?
I don't believe in balance. Balance is when you're standing still.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm always moving, but more importantly, I'm inclusion.
Yeah.
So I include my kid and stuff. I don't exclude him. Yeah. So therefore, he's always there, right? Unless he's with his mom. And by the way, I got the greatest ex-wife in the world. I know it sounds weird, but she's such a great co-parent and cool lady. And her boyfriend and I get along. We all, it's really nice in today's society, you know, where I live in California. Yeah. Everyone's cool and easy. And what's nice is that I include him. So if I'm learning something new in business, for example, you know, and when Bitcoin started hitting, I said, hey, son, what do you want to do? You got all this money from your grandparents. You want to put in the bank or buy one of these Bitcoiny things? And he did. And now he owns a lot of money in Bitcoin at 7, 8 years old.
Yeah.
Same thing as he's learning stocks and things. So he's learning as I'm learning.
That's awesome. The last question that I wanted to ask was just, there's a lot of people who listen to this who aren't yet parents or they're expecting. And I like to kind of have a roundup of what our guests' best piece of advice is, either that they received or that they would give to a new parent. So what is the best piece of advice you could give to a new parent?
The first year is hard. And people don't talk about it enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They don't talk about, you know, the woman, how her body is changing and the emotions and all the different, you know, chemical, you know, offshoots and things of this nature, and to be kind toward that. And then two, that as a father, you're not a jerk and a mean guy because you forgot to put your socks away. Just it's just things are off a little bit. And I think if everyone gave themselves that period of time to just be a little bit more compassionate and caring, there would be less divorces, because there's a out says why dads leave, and the phenomenon between the first year of having a kid, how fast fathers go. And it's because I don't think they're armed with the information of how tough it truly is on the woman and on your relationship. And I think that needs to be spoken about more.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully if what this is doing is a 0.1% of a help in that conversation, then I'm pleased with that. Look, Greg, thank you so, so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And go enjoy that Californian sun.
All right. See you later, my friend.
Cheers. Thank you. That's all we've got time for this week. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Career Dad Show. If you did, have you got 10 seconds to rate the podcast? Maybe you've got 20 and can write a review. I appreciate all of you guys for listening. See you next week. Stay cool. Be kind.